From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. My name is Jose Alvarez.
And my name is Jose Alvarez.
And the other Jose Alvarez is not here this week. If you haven't guessed what we're talking about, there are very bad introductions right there. We are talking about a very amazing gentleman by the name of James the Amazing Randy. You got Stuart here this week, and over there in Colorado is John Grace. Hi, John.
Hi.
Okay, as you guessed, okay, Hunter missing this week. He's not here.
It's bending spoons.
This is all relevant, people, what we're saying. Don't worry. Watch this documentary that we're going to be talking about today, and you'll work out what we're talking about. And the documentary, John, that we are talking about is An Honest Liar.
Yes.
About the amazing, and I mean the term amazing, deeply, because this man is amazing. James the Amazing Randy. Yes. Who you ask? Okay, a lot of you out there probably wouldn't have heard about him. If you do, I can't say I blame you, because he's not that well known these days. If you grew up on television back in the 70s and 80s, like John and I did, you would most likely know about him. John, when did you first encounter James Randy, and how?
Probably around 1985, when I would watch Johnny Carson's The Tonight Show, and Randy would be on there every couple of weeks when Carson was hosting, because Carson had him on there to debunk like psychics and faith healers and whatever frauds were big, you know, around that time. Horoscopes, everything. It was actually the first time I saw a skeptic on television.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like somebody actually debunked, because TV in the early 80s was very pro bullshit nonsense stuff. Like, lots of pro UFO stuff that would be laughed at today. Even HBO, you know, everybody acts like HBO documentaries are these great works of journalism. They had all these crazy, like, insane pro UFO documentaries that you can't find anywhere today, like, unless somebody uploads them on YouTube, you know, from their old beta tapes.
Yeah.
But ABC would air That's Incredible, which was literally an hour of fraud.
Ain't that the truth?
That's what it was. It was insanely fraudulent. And the way people are, they'll say, what's on TV? It has to be real. That was a common belief back then. So then you see somebody like James Randi saying, well, this is all nonsense, and this is what they're doing, and this is the trick they're doing, and they're not talking to the dead. They're just doing cold reading, this old carny trick, and all magicians know this stuff. And, he was really cool. And, He would also, at the time, I think he was battling with the televangelist who was doing the faith healing things on TV, and he would present footage, and Carson would give him a lot of time in a very respectable segment. This is back when The Tonight Show was actually really worth watching. It wasn't this absolute celebrity promotion nonsense like Leno and Letterman.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Turned late night talk shows into. Carson actually had a pretty engaging show. He had James Randi on. He would give him a lot of time and keep him on for the whole show. And somebody like Brooke Shields would go, I think we only use 10% of our minds. Or like, well, nobody ever said that we use just 10% of our minds. It's just a saying, you know.
Yeah.
Just that type of necessary thing you needed on television. And the audiences were bigger for those shows back then as well. And, I would always just go out of my way to catch James Randi when he's on. And I eventually bought his books, like Flim Flam, and I read his book about he did a book on televangelist faith healer types. And he also did a book debunking the prophecies of Nostradamus and how it's just mistranslated.
Really? I need to get his books. I watched his documentary, just finished watching it again for the second time just before recording this show. I'm like, I've got to read his books. I really need to get a hold of him somewhere.
His books were excellent. They were like, the Nostradamus one was tremendous. And, it's funny because a lot of people act like they can't stand him, especially recently when you had this rise of popularity of people like Jonathan Edwards and Sylvia Brown, who's now dead, and they would just be on Larry King. So Larry King would bring James Randi on to kind of argue with them. But literally, instead of debunking what Randi said about him, arguing the point, they would just say, "We just feel bad for you, Randi. You're obviously an unhappy person." And he was just like laughing at him. Like, yeah. What on earth are you talking about? I'm not ripping people off with an old carny trick.
No. And the thing is that we can draw parallels for the younger audience out there who still don't know about James Randi. If you watch Penn and Teller's Bullshit, of course, Penn and Teller being two very famous magicians and debunkers as well, James Randi was pretty much the precursor to Penn and Teller.
Oh, yeah. They're carrying on the Randi tradition. I think they've even admitted it, that it's pretty much carrying on the James Randi tradition.
Oh, it really is. But the thing is about Randi, he's an escape artist, world-famous escape artist, probably one of the best ever. If he'd been likened to Houdini, he was that good. Magician, debunker, and, of course, on this documentary, we find out that he came out as a homosexual at age 81, which was amazing.
But no surprise to anybody if you think that a guy over the age of 80, unmarried, no children, and goes by the name The Amazing Randi is homosexual. And, you know, I can't say that my jaw dropped to the floor or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I knew about it anyway before I watched this, but but for those clearly unfamiliar with James Randi, I personally find James Randi to be incredible, like one of the most astounding human beings of the 20th century.
He is a hero of mine.
He really is. Yeah.
I always say it's always my heroes are like G. Gordon Liddy and, Engelbert Humperdinck and James Randi or whatever, you know.
Okay, I got to ask you just to get off topic. Why Engelbert Humperdinck?
I don't know. I just had to pick a lounge singer. I would say Dean Martin. Actually, maybe Dean Martin more than Engelbert.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Dean Martin's always been – that's one of the first guys I ever saw on television. So it's just kind of like, okay, Dean Martin's a hero. But definitely James Randi.
Oh, yeah. I remember encountering James Randi as on television back in the late 70s. There's a very famous footage of him on this documentary on a show called The Don Lane Show. Don Lane was an American who came out to Australia in the late 50s when the television boom was happening over here and was part of this whole pack of youngsters that came out, like young men. They came out looking for a career in television and obviously found it and succeeded at it greatly, along with Burt Newton, who was his co-host on the Don Lane Show, which ran from 75 to 83, filmed out of Melbourne over here. And on there, if you can recall, John, there's this big, tall American guy who is sort of blasting Randi and says, "And you can piss off," and he gets up and walks away and flips the table over. That's Don Lane, and he was the guy, like I said, who was on Australian television here. I remember the very famous arguments that Lane and James Randi had about Uri Geller, who I do not like Uri Geller. I think he's despicable.
No,
and
can't stand him.
Yeah, he's always been a fucking fraud and a charlatan in my eyes. He's just, I've never believed that guy.
Well, I think anybody who's fully awake and looking at something 100% knows he's a fraud.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, even the whole...
There's that whole mass audience that I think wants to believe he's real.
Well, that's what they say at the end of this documentary. It's people out there who want to believe in things and are being lied to and cheated to and bullshitted to, basically. But they want to have something to believe in. And we'll get to that shortly, about a few of the encounters that James Randi's had over the course of his debunking years. Because he wasn't always a debunker. You know, he was a magician for many, many years, for decades, actually, from the, what would you say, John, about the 40s and the 50s onwards?
I think 1950s. I mean, he designed Alice Cooper's stage show.
Yeah, we learned about that.
In the 70s, all the magic tricks and everything. And I know that it's not, I don't think this is in the film, but he had wrote an essay why he became an American citizen. It was because in Canada, the Alice Cooper tour was raided by the cops. And they just went through everything, and he said that wouldn't be allowed in America. So he worked on becoming an American citizen.
Right. Because find out that James Randi is actually Canadian-born. And, so I encountered James Randi through the Don Lane stuff in the, I want to say the very late 70s, if not say like 1980 or something around there. So I was a kid when I first saw him.
Yeah, this revealed to me that he was really big in Australia. He was almost like an Australian TV, you know, regular.
Well, that's what we're getting to shortly. Let's cut to the chase, get straight into this documentary, An Honest Liar. It doesn't really give you a great deal of history about Randy's background. Like, he doesn't, you know, we find out a little bit of his father, him and his father, and they had a couple of conversations throughout the course of their time, and he left home at 17 to join the circus and never went back. But that's really about this. There's no talk of any, you know, any siblings or, you know, or any sort of any family relation that are spoken to in this. Basically, the only family he's got is the gentleman that we bring up later on. Now, we do see, I want to say that one of the first things that really blew my mind in this was because something that actually made me remember what happened was the Carlos experiment that happened here in Australia on 60 Minutes, which was, I had seen that because it was obviously very, very big when it happened out here and had forgotten all about it. And I'm watching this, I go, holy shit, I remember this now. After nearly 30 years of it happening, it's like, I remember this, seeing this as a kid. And reading about it in the papers and it being on 60 Minutes, and you saw idiots on this show, like Australian journalists like Mike Willacy and Richard Wilkins and who's the other guy? Is it Mike Carlton, I think his name is? Just morons, you know, like real dregs of Australian media buying into this crap. And
was Steve Dunleavy part of that?
No, Steve Dunleavy, no. He wasn't. He was not in this.
He was in New York writing Elvis books.
We shipped him out to the States real quick. He was like,
yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks goddamn lot.
Well, we shipped Mike Willacy over there as well, but no one ever knew who he was. You know, he was
also gave us Richard Dawson, so I guess we should be grateful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Host a Family Feud. Australian, but actually does a pretty good job of hiding his accent if he ever had a regular one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I never knew he was Australian until like I read on the internet he was Australian. I was like, what?
I never knew he was till you just told me now. I don't even know the name, to be honest with you.
It was a stunner.
Yeah.
Totally stunner.
Anyway, the Carlos experiment was something that was concocted by James Randi and his partner at the time, but sort of like an acquaintance of his. Young Puerto Rican or Venezuelan teenage boy, Jose Alvarez, who would later go on to become Randy's partner, lifelong partner of 25 years plus. And to fool the media, Randy and Alvarez concocted, or Randy more so concocted, a channeler. It was because what it was to actually show the bullshit. Because now, John, do you remember the whole Ramtha thing when it happened back in the 80s? Oh, were you familiar with that?
No.
Wow, okay. Because it was huge. Like, it was huge over here as well. Ramtha. I'm like, even as a teenage boy, I said, this is bullshit. This is crap. Right. This whole Ramtha. I'm like, I'm not buying this 35,000 year old spirit being channeled by this woman called Jay-Z Knight or whatever her name was.
No, I never heard about this.
Okay. And, like, you'd see her commercials on television at late night, and, you know, it's basically like, you know, just to get off topic for a sec, I actually watched this documentary and said, God, I wish James Randi would have debunked, you know, Dionne Warwick and her whole fucking psychic friends shit commercials that she had on nights, because, God, they were awful.
Well, he was always of the don't ever trust psychics, period, like when he was on Carson.
Yeah.
But, nobody is psychic. Nobody has ESP. It's just, you know.
Yeah. But so the whole Ramtha thing was like, this is ridiculous. I remember seeing the story on 60 Minutes. I'm going, nah, I ain't buying this for a second. So to sort of prove how stupid the whole thing was, Randy invented this channeler named Carlos. It's ridiculous when you watch it. But people bought into it. And it was massive. And, you know, they showed the whole Sydney Opera House filled with people who bought into this whole bullshit. And Jose Alvarez says in this thing, he goes, I was just making it up as I was going along. He was basically just taught hand movements by Randy, but making the whole thing up. And it was later exposed as a fraud, and 60 Minutes were found with egg on their face. And it's laughable when you watch it today. You know,
yeah.
It's completely laughable. But so we see, and this, like I said, this documentary is broken up into segments. It focuses on Randy and his life with Alvarez, and also the people he's debunked. Uri Geller being one of them. But my favorite one in this whole documentary was Peter Popoff. Now, I had not known of that person before. What can you tell me about him?
It was pretty new to me, like most of that stuff. But yeah, here's the thing with Peter Popoff. He was a TV televangelist, probably the worst. Like, you always hear, oh, Jerry Falwell's terrible and Jimmy Swaggart's terrible, and really they would just say crazy things. Peter Popoff was actually doing faith healing on TV.
Yeah,
like people throwing away their crutches, rising out of the wheelchair, just really dastardly shit. I mean, it was just blatantly obnoxious, the worst stereotype of the televangelist that you see in movies and TV.
I was going to say, wasn't the Steve Martin film Leap of Faith based on Popoff, or that?
That's what Wikipedia says, but it's like, but to me, it's like there was like four or five other guys like him, you know? That was just a common image you had, because you had PTL on every cable system. So Jim and Tammy Baker, and who were running an insane outfit under the Praise the Lord channel, and basically building a giant amusement park at Heritage USA, and every other show on their channel was crazy. It would be like some old hippie talking about how all these rock lyrics are about overthrowing God from the kingdom of heaven.
Oh,
and he was like reading
goodness.
Pink Floyd lyrics, and stuff. I think it was called The Eagle's Nest. I used to watch it out of just morbid, sick curiosity. I was like that even when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was just laughing at them. And boy, if there's anything that'll drive you away from a religion, just watch that stuff. But Popoff was one of the most obnoxious, and Randy did this whole investigation. They really only skimmed the surface, because he has all the details, and I think in his Flim Flam had a lot of detail about this stuff. And they were just creeps. And Randy kind of put them out of business, or put Popoff Ministries out of business. Popoff comes back every few years trying to make a comeback. Like, you can't get rid of the guy at all.
What was that shit they were selling on the later on the show, Popoff? And he was selling that that spring water. What was it?
Oh God! And that's probably the lightest. That's probably one of the only believable things he was probably selling. You know?
Which is like the water that Jesus trod through when he was.
Yeah. It was. It was just that type of insane nonsense. It's the worst, like you see in movies. And
yeah.
This guy was making millions. He was pocketing millions every year with his ministry. And Randy kind of was one of the things that sunk him. And what was really fascinating was. It showed him debunking James Heidrich, who did a pencil moving trick on That's Incredible. James Heidrich would go around claiming he was some sort of kung fu karate master.
True. Yes.
And this is what's so funny. In 1987 or 88, I bought an issue of Insight Kung Fu, which had James Heidrich on the cover. And it was this total ass-kissing article written by a guy who became the editor that just had it like, oh, Heidrich's this misunderstood guy who's been on death row, and he kicked through the walls of the prison and escaped and escaped from jail. I mean, absolutely no journalist responsibility whatsoever. And they didn't, at no time did they reveal why he was in prison. And of course, it was on child molestation charges.
Oh, and, shit, really?
Yes. What's funny is a few months later, there was a letter published in the letters column of Inside Kung Fu by Mike Barron, also the comic book writer of The Flash, The Punisher, Nexus, and who wants to come on our show if he can ever stay up late. but he said, this is the worst article you've ever published. It shows no ethics of journalism or anything. And it's funny. And then years later, I became friends with Mike Barron, and I mentioned this to him, and it just blew his mind when I told him what was in the documentary, that James Heidrich was there. It's like, remember you wrote that letter and it was published? And so Heidrich, the very next year, was busted for something like 14 counts of child molestation.
Jeez.
Still in prison. Still locked up.
He's locked up. Wow.
Yeah. He's still in prison, or he's like in a psychiatric, he's in a psychiatric ward or something. Like, he's not allowed out, but he's not a free man. I think he's still in prison, but he's under the whatever the mental ward is in prison or whatever, but he's a nutcase. He's just a nutcase pedophile. But Randy's debunking him on that TV show that they showed a clip of, but he did the pencil trick on That's Incredible. It's just an old you know, simple magician's trick.
Yeah, yeah. That was brilliant of Randy. I actually seen that bit before on a YouTube clip where he sprinkles the foam bits around the actual, around the newspaper, around the phone book, I believe it was.
Right, right. And then Heidrich learned the trick in prison.
Oh, really?
Yes. Wow. Because I did more digging up because I went, oh my God, I didn't know that James Heidrich was debunked by Randy. And it's like, I remember Heidrich being in the karate magazines and everybody hated him. And, you know, they'll give anybody exposure back then. He was just one of the worst frauds that they ever had. And, that was fascinating to see.
It really was. And back to Popoff, though. I mean, it's a pretty powerful sequence, this one. You see this guy. This guy is a good actor, let's say that much.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows how to rope people in and, you know, a lot of it's done through a lot of screaming and, you know, bravado and things like that. But what Randy does, along with the help of the surveillance guy that he hires ended up being Banachek, the magician.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. The way that he exposes what Popoff was doing and how he was doing it, and then to go on Johnny Carson and expose it the way he did with the wit and the humor that he did, it was very, very funny the way he did.
I watched those as he was investigating Popoff, and Carson gave him a lot of time on the show.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I mean, James Randi is an incredibly intelligent human being. Very, very bright man. But
here's something I noticed. All escape artists seem to be brilliant guys who are sort of like polymaths. You know, they're good at so many different things.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking like Harry Houdini, who Hunter and I discussed on an earlier show. Comic book artist Jim Steranko started as an escape artist before he was an innovative comic book artist. And
really?
Became a publisher, yes.
Okay.
And he's a brilliant guy when you talk to him. Really smart guy. But it's funny, these escape artistry obviously requires somebody with some really good brains in their cranium.
Yeah.
Because they all tend to be brilliant polymath types.
Yeah, that's true. True.
And Randy is no slouch in that category. He's a really bright guy.
Yeah. But the thing is, well, with what I like about Randy is the fact that he turned from being a magician into a debunker.
Yeah.
Which takes a lot of balls to do that, really. Because you're putting your reputation on the line, and you better be good at what you're doing.
You like confrontation. And Houdini did it. You know, Houdini used to go around.
They mentioned it. I didn't know that Houdini was a debunker as well. I mean, obviously, an escape artist, a magician from the greatest of all time, but I didn't know he was a debunker as well.
He was a debunker, and that was his friendship with Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes. Conan Doyle believed almost anything that you told, and Houdini's like, no, this is the truth. This is what this medium is doing. And, you know, I think they get disgusted that these frauds are using old magician tricks to make money and take advantage of people and scam people. So they see it as an offense since they're the code of magic or the magician's inner circle, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, so I really enjoyed that Peter Popoff section quite a bit. What's some of the other sequences we get in there? We get the Alpha Project. Had you heard about this before in the past, somewhere along the way?
Didn't know much about it. I remember reading a chapter in Flim Flam, and this obviously gives you a lot more footage and idea of what was going on. It was funny, is like some of his fellow magicians didn't really feel right about it.
Yeah, I mean, they were young guys. They were in their late teens, early 20s by the time the actual Alpha Project had finished, which was a 4-year undertaking.
Yeah.
But I found that bit fascinating. And then when they actually go to that, what was it, like a paranormal, or not the paranormal, what's a psychic seminar or something, they just say, it was all fake. We tricked the lawyers. And just, you see this woman just sitting there with her mouth agape. She can't believe what she's just heard. It's just...
And I think it was kind of like for like the American intelligence offices that participated in that, like the CIA, I think it was because... I seem to recall there were like really strong rumors or maybe even unconfirmed reports that the Soviet Union had like testing and that sort of thing.
Jesus.
Going on behind the Iron Curtain. So that was almost like a response to that, but it's just stupid. It's like, come on, this isn't real. This is old Carney stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically the government was a mark for Carney's.
Oh, God. But can you imagine how much millions of dollars that the McDonald laboratories must have poured into this whole scam?
I think that's why they felt bad about it. It's just like, okay, in the end, what did we prove?
Yeah, you proved you got duped, but I mean, this laboratory is out when it could have really been doing some sort of study that people were genuine about and pouring the money into this whole 4-year scam.
Kind of curing cancer and dealing with these.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I still found the whole bit fascinating to watch about that Alpha Project. Yeah. Like I said, I've got to get these goddamn books. I don't know how I'm going to find them because, I mean, what were they published back in the 80s? At least the 70s?
Yeah, they were still in print. They were published by Prometheus Books out of New York, and I think they keep them in print. I don't think they're rare.
Okay, good.
And does Australia have like libraries, like public libraries, where they have a collection of old books you can check out?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. You might find them in there. That's where I read like most of them. I think the only one I bought was Flim Flam.
Mm. Yeah. Of course, I might be just lazy and just see if they're on the Kindle somewhere.
And they might be. I mean, Prometheus is run by these pro-science guys. They better be up on technology and put this stuff on e-books.
I guess so. But, okay, let's move on to the Uri Geller section because it takes up a fair chunk of this documentary. Randy's long-standing feud with Geller. And, I mean, what can you say? The guy is basically just... I wouldn't even call him a good charlatan. I'd just call him a charlatan. That's all he is.
It's pretty mediocre. Not like a Doug Henning or a David Copperfield. It's just like...
No, not at all.
The most simple spoon-bending nonsense that any third-rate magician, you know, who works kids' parties can do.
And I mean, geez, I mean, that whole bit we see him where he's rubbing the part of the spoon where it starts to actually get to you got the end of the handle and you got towards the actual spoon itself. That I knew was actually just a case. I knew this back in the fucking early 90s. I read up a little bit on this. You just slightly saw it with a little, like a little grinder, and the heat will just make it dissipate and break away in your hand. It's that easy.
Right.
But Geller went by on his looks. I mean, I don't really see what women would have saw in Geller in his looks, but...
He had that skinny...
Long, wavy hair, you know, the Israeli accent.
He had that 70s look. There was a look that was attractive to women in the 70s that wouldn't be attractive today. Just like what women like about men now wouldn't be attractive in the 70s.
You see, like one short bit, and you see just girls screaming like he's a rock star. Like he was basically a rock star back in the '70s, wasn't he?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah,
it's like but it's a case of people wanting to believe he's this super being, you know, he's Doctor Strange brought to life with the accent and the disco image.
more like Magneto brought to life if he's bending metal.
Right.
Yeah. But, long-standing feud between Geller. And they actually interview Geller for this towards the end of the documentary. And looks like the guy sold his soul to the devil. Makes he has not aged. Nah, he still looks the damn same after 40 years.
You know, I always say it's because these guys don't smoke. If you look at the non-smokers and how they age compared to the smokers, they do very well.
Yeah, true. Well, then I should age quite well because I never have.
Chris Isaac still looks like he's 40 and he's like in his 60s.
Yeah, really, right? I know.
It's frightening.
Bastard. He looks that good.
But he's
60.
A healthy guy. He's, you know, he doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, you know, just surfs.
Surfs and I think he's a vegetarian even, if I'm not mistaken. I think so.
He might be, but it's like those guys just don't age. As long as they're not smoking, I think he can do pretty well.
Yeah, really. Okay, so... yeah, so we get a lot of footage of Geller and his crap, or his one of my favorite bits in this as well, where he bends the key to it was Barbara Walters. He's showing her like how he bends the key, and James the next shot you see James Randi doing the same thing to Barbara Walters, and she just can't believe she's been fooled. But
she's the biggest dimbulb that's ever been on network television. she really pioneered the airhead hostess of the news. they were supposed to relate to the. Back then, I guess you wouldn't call them soccer moms. I guess they were football moms, but you know, whatever the definition is.
Soccer moms.
Yeah, soccer mom is the new label for housewives these days.
Yeah. Don't know how they came up with that one, but whatever. And, but, yeah, so the thing is, with the end, with Gallo, we find out he's now selling
cubic zirconium.
Basically, yeah, jewelry on QVC, which is supposed to enhance your mind when you purchase this crap. It's like, really?
Did you ever watch The X-Files?
No, it just didn't interest me.
There was a comedic episode of The X-Files that had a spoof of Uri Geller called The Amazing Yappy. And it was an actor who looked just Geller. The same Israeli accent and Mulder would debunk everything he was doing and he would just get extremely... And I think he may have appeared. It was written by a guy named Darren Morgan, who's the brother of Glenn Morgan, who was a regular writer for the X-Files. And Darren Morgan's scripts were always uniquely funny. And I think The Amazing Yappy appeared in a episode of Millennium that was written by Darren Morgan.
Right.
But I'd have to rewatch it just to make sure. But yeah, The Amazing Yappy was their Uri Geller spoof on the X-Files.
Wow.
It was the episode with Peter Boyle. I think you could probably catch it on Netflix if you if X-Files is still on there.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's worth a look. You like the show? I think that one is still really entertaining.
Right. Okay. Well, I may dive into it, but I never found the X Files. I never found the whole attraction. What's that one? Was it Gillian Anderson?
Yeah, I don't really get the.
I don't get the whole fucking just like screaming, how hot she. I just never got it. But whatever. Yeah. Some guys dig it.
She wasn't the reason to watch. She was not the reason to watch the show.
No. But
it was good suspense for when it was. But The Amazing Yappy is a good reason to watch it.
Yeah. And you know what, they show footage of the Amazing Randy back in the '70s on Happy Days, and I'm like, I'm sure I've seen this episode.
I don't think I've seen it. I mean I'm not a regular Happy Days fan.
I was. I really was. And I was like,
everybody was except me,
Of course, it's you.
It's like, does it have a dinosaur in it? Does it have Raquel Welch in it? I'm not watching it.
Yeah.
Linda Carter in it? I'm not watching.
Not watching it?
That was in 78,
Oh, really? Speaking of Linda Carter, you should check out a film called Bobby Joe and the Outlaw. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody who digs Linda Carter has seen that.
Like, yeah, anybody. Yeah, right. Really?
Used to be a staple on cable in the 70s on like HBO and stuff because Wonder Woman was still in the air and then she had brief nude scenes.
Yeah, yeah. And she was with Marjo Gortner, who, if speaking of Peter Popoff, if you want to see the real Peter Popoff from back in the 70s and back in the late 40s, even as a young child, as an evangelist in the 70s, who in 72 in the documentary Marjo about him just basically blows a whistle on the whole evangelism thing and just how full of shit it is. It's all a money-making scam.
Yeah.
That's a documentary I've been trying to get pushed onto this show to get covered because I think it'd be fascinating.
I've seen it. It's very good.
Yeah. I don't think Hunter's seen it, though.
Definitely worth a review and definitely get Hunter to check it out.
Yeah.
Plus, we're going to make jokes about Star Crash.
Oh, we're making jokes about lots of Marjo's movies, like Food of the Gods.
I've never seen. A lot of those, I've only seen Star Crash, and I remember some of his appearances on TV, on Fall Guy, I believe, or some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's also the killer in the first Kojak TV movie, the Marcus Nelson murders.
Bugger me, so he is. Yeah, I've got that. Yeah. I've got that box set of that, or that first series of Kojak, which has got that included in it.
That was his big TV debut. But he's really good in that. He was a good actor. It's like
Marjo's good. I mean, you guys have heard me talk about When You're Coming Back, Red Rider on this. I mean, he's the lead in that, and he's fantastic in that movie. And boy, this is a forgotten film. I keep fucking pressuring companies to release.
You're the only one who mentions it. A lot of people bring it up, and it's one probably if you made a list of like the 10 obscure movies that people are trying to say, hey, release this on DVD or give it something, that's got always in the top 10, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because it's a good psychoanalysis slash, drama. It's well acted. It's really, especially by Marjo, and it's got Hal Linden in it, animals guys. Like, he can do other stuff besides. Yeah, it's got Candy Clark in it. It's who's the woman from The Omen 2? Lee Grant. She's in it. So it's got a decent cast, and it's a good story. It's basically a play, turned into a film. But I've always enjoyed it, because I got reeled in by the caption on the actual VHS tape, "More Savage than Midnight Express." I'm like, wow, I've got to watch this. Because at the time, I thought Midnight Express was a great film. It wasn't until I read Billy Hayes' book, the actual real guy from Midnight Express, and went back and watched Midnight Express and said, this is a pile of shit. This is terrible, and it is. It's a freaking terrible movie, Midnight Express.
Oliver Stone on a Coke John.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's like inaccuracy compared to Billy Hayes' book. Not even close.
It's like Argo. Remember Argo was so praised from a couple of years ago, and they acted like it was this big, like, dangerous mission to Iran. And if you read the actual article, it was like a milk run. It was like one of the easiest CIA operations of all time.
Really? It's odd because
they had no problems whatsoever. They had no problems at the airport, nothing.
Wow, okay. Because I read up on Argo maybe 2 days ago. I read up a little bit on Wikipedia, but I was actually looking more for the original poster that they were using to, use as a fake film.
The Jack Kirby, it was Jack Kirby who was supposed to be doing a movie based on Roger Zelazny's Lord of Light. They completely changed it in the movie. And that actually was talked about in comic prozines or fan magazines at the time.
Really?
Jack Kirby's Lord of Light, yes!
Jeez.
Okay. I've seen, to go back to Steranko, he did a magazine in the 70s that became Preview Magazine, but I think it was called Media Scene back then. But I think it's mentioned on the cover, Jack Kirby's Lord of Light project. In like 1979, when they were doing this, this mission.
Yeah.
so there was just enough out there to push it as a real thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the real stuff is more interesting, but doesn't make a good movie, because certain details in real life just don't translate well on the screen. That's why you get all the silly, often unnecessary fictionalization.
Well, I actually watched the film and I really enjoyed it, but I hadn't.
I liked it too, but it's bullshit. But I enjoyed it.
See, I didn't know nothing about this Argo. I'm like, okay, I like Affleck as a director. I think he's really good. I liked Gone Baby Gone. I really enjoyed The Town quite a bit. Yeah. I was like, okay, well, Argo is the next one. I want to see it, and I was captivated by it. But I know there's a couple of websites out there that are floating around that really, sort of debunk Argo, the film, compared to real life events. I just need to read up on it and just
even the politics is just ridiculous. It's like America put in puppet leaders in Iran. It didn't happen. It's just like if you know anything about the history of that whole situation, it's just nonsense. It's like leftist mythology.
I want to actually
CIA's controlling everything. Ooh, whatever.
Yeah.
They get fooled by James Randi. You think they're controlling Iran? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to know. I want to read up actually how big an involvement makeup artist John Chambers was with that whole thing, because I got a feeling that he was actually used in the film a lot more than he really was in real life. I don't know. I need to read up on this stuff.
I believe he was. I do know that he did a lot of work for the CIA.
Okay,
like this guy, like, that is legit. Like, he actually did that. In fact, when there was talk about debunking the Bigfoot film that was filmed at Bluff Creek in Oregon, that the big rumor was John Landis was spreading this around, was that John Chambers built the suit. And it said John Chambers did a lot of stuff he would deny doing. And I thought he made the suit. And of course, it turns out some guy who runs a mail-order gorilla costume company said, no, he modified a suit I sold to him or whatever. But John Chambers had the type of reputation where there were just so many legends and stories around him, because he had no problem participating in pranks and, as it turns out, working for the CIA. That was totally legit.
Wait. So that Bigfoot thing's not real? Yeah, shit.
Yeah. No. Cross that off the list there. Sorry. I didn't mean to break your heart.
Jesus. First of all, Uri Geller's a fake, and now Bigfoot's not real. I was like, man, my life's just crashing around me at the moment.
Tell you, the world's really dark and
it's a horror. Next thing you're going to tell me that that Heidrick guy was real as well, and he's a good, kind-hearted soul. And
man, consult this guy for martial arts lessons.
Fuck, I think yeah, I know, right? You can tell me that
the real world is dull.
Barbara Walters is really bright. It's like, come on, man. It's like, I gotta abandon this episode. I can't take it. It's too yeah. But, you know, with this documentary as well, it shows a lot of James Randi's debunking and his schemes to fool, companies like the Mac Lab and that. But ultimately, it's a love story as well, this documentary, between, shock horror, between two men who are basically in love with each other, It's and while there's a number of years between them in age, Randi was had to be like early 80s in this one. 81, 82 years old, and I think Jose Alvarez, what's he, about 50 maybe? Late 40s?
Possibly. I think it started, Randi was like, maybe in his 50s or late 50s, and Jose was pretty young.
About 19, wasn't he? 17 or 19, about 19 I think it was.
Yeah, it was that type of, it was that type of relationship.
Yeah, it was a Heidrick. No, well, it wasn't a Heidrick because he was of age.
Illegal.
Yeah, yeah. No.
He was over the age of consent. But yeah, he was so also that's one
yeah. We're just joking.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
but
it really is like a love story. It's quite touching as well.
Yeah, and it's not that type of posturing you get from what you see from gays in the media right now.
No, it's really not. No, it's
with
too
with the freakazoid parade nonsense and looking like. You know, they used to complain that cruising was very negative with the stereotypes. And it's like, well, gosh, you guys, every time you do a parade, you totally make cruising look like a like a totally normal, like an episode of Eight is Enough.
It really is. It's so true. It is so true.
Here you see the humanity and their romance and everything, and it makes sense. But
yeah,
there's a twist, which we won't go into.
No, yeah. Let's say, like John just said, the last 20 minutes, 20, 25 minutes of this documentary has a twist. We are not going to tell you what it is. Please don't be lazy and go on Google and read it. We want you to watch this documentary, whether you go out and rent it. It's on Netflix. For those who have it, you can just watch it. An Honest Liar. You need to watch this documentary, honestly. But yeah, the last 20, 25 minutes of this has a twist. And that's all we're saying.
And it apparently was not planned at all by the documentarians, and it's implied by Randi. He didn't even want this stuff filmed and put in the movie. And I don't think he's lying about that. I think it's just something, a progression of events happened as they were filming it.
That's it.
I think originally it was supposed to be about him coming out, which, like I said, why would that be a big deal?
Yeah.
We all pretty much knew it, seeing him on Carson in the 80s. But I think it ended up making the movie a lot more compelling than it was originally planned to be.
It really did. I when I finished watching it the first time, I thought, okay, was I just duped by the end of this? But then I read up on it, and I was like, okay, no, we weren't, or it was just, just something. Yeah, but you couldn't. Okay, that's all we're going to say. Yeah, we're not going to say anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, what were some of the favorite bits you had in this, John? I mean, it's just cramp. You know what I watched? You know what I really liked? I really like watching James Randi escape from the things they had him in. The straitjacket held up, hanging upside down, the straitjacket from that footage back in the 50s. Holy shit, they didn't go into it, but there was one they showed him being suspended in the air over, what was it, Niagara Falls?
Yeah.
Fuck. I mean, that's
one of his most famous ones that he... I think Houdini did it first, but I have to look it up. But that stuff is always thrilling to watch, and I always hate that, there's no Starenko escapes on film that I know of, or some of these other guys who do this incredible stuff, but it's always cool to watch. Like, they get buried alive and with handcuffs, and then they bust out.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, you see one quick shot of the amazing Randi actually in a huge block of ice, and he gets himself out, I think.
Yeah.
The fuck does he do these things,
And there's I used to have a book that I gave away a long time. It was written by Houdini, and it was kind of like he revealed some stuff, or it was a book about Houdini published in his time, and it revealed some of that stuff, but the book's long gone, unfortunately. But yeah, there's weird little tricks they do. It's like, Starenko mentioned making a pocket of air with his hands and claiming he's breathing through that while he was buried alive. It's just weird stuff.
Jeez.
It just sounds crazy. But sometimes it's very obvious stuff that you're like, oh, I'm not thinking about that because they've distracted me so much with the gaga of, oh, look at the handcuffs. Ah, look at what they're doing to him. And meanwhile, he's securing certain things to make sure he gets out alive.
Well, the one, I mean, even just the one that you see a few times in this where he's got his hands tied behind his back and then he says, yeah. Oh, look at the time, and he pulls his hand out. It's like, how does he do it?
I imagine it's something in the brain, kind of like, I can never do a Rubik's Cube, but I knew people who could solve a Rubik's Cube in a minute.
Speaking of that, there was some kid who solved it in, what was it, 6 seconds? Just the other day? It's like...
Yeah, there's kids who could just naturally boom, boom, and, you know, using a good portion of that math part of the brain, I guess, but I can't do it. And, of course, coincidentally, I'm pretty bad at math, so...
I never ever solved a Rubik's Cube. Actually, the only way I ever solved it was pulling it apart and putting all the colors back together.
Putting the stickers...
I've done that! I've done it!
Yeah, it's funny. I could solve the missing link, the chain one that was chain-linked. I could solve that.
Really?
Never solved Rubik's Cube. Yeah, I could solve the missing link. I could do that, but I couldn't do a Rubik's Cube. I could get, like, two sides perfect, and that would be it.
I remember a few times.
I got the writing, talking brain or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I remember just a few times just getting, you know, the Rubik's Cube, like, I'm one block away from solving. It's like, couldn't work it out and throw the thing against the wall. Ah, go fuck yourself, you stupid thing.
And there would be these books they would sell how to solve the Rubik's Cube, but you couldn't solve the fucking thing.
Yeah.
These books. It was like, there was like three of them like that. And it was just like, ah.
Yeah, yeah. A Dummy's Guide to Solving a Rubik's Cube is all those bullshit books. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I'm reading Bees for Dummy, Beekeeping for Dummies right now.
Are you really into this beekeeping thing, aren't you?
Yeah, and I'm going to buy that Australian... flow hive set, or high flow, whatever that one's called.
What is that?
Oh, I didn't. Did I describe this stuff to you? What you Australians are contributing to the beekeeping world?
Honey, I guess that's about all I can think of.
The
bees.
These two Australians. Huh. They invented a type of. Let me see if I can. I want to make sure I get the names right. So let me. I unfortunately have to use the. The Honey on Tap, it is a, let's see, flow hive. And it was designed by two Australians, and it's basically a very low-maintenance beehive. And all you basically have to do is go out. You don't have to disturb the bees. You can apparently lift something and see the bees at work, you know, so you and your kid can observe it or whatever. Hmm. And you basically just turn the tap, and the honey comes right out. You don't have to pull out the, you know, the frames. Get the honey out. It's a very, you know, it probably cuts down your hard work by like 80%. You still have to do a few things and put on the suit, but yeah, I'm gonna buy one. I've decided I'm just gonna buy the complete full flow hive.
John, yeah, as a father of a young child, of a young boy, do you think it's wise to have all those fucking bees around your house or in the yard?
This is the thing. The bees don't stay in your yard. The bees go to the nearest large water source. Like, we have a river. The Platte River runs near my house.
Right.
And we also have a lake or slash pond in a park that's just right down the block. And so the bees are going to go to that water, the biggest source of water. They don't stay in the area and never, you know, they'll go up to something like 5 miles away from the hive.
Wow.
They go on a journey. Like, they go out and work. They're looking for flowers and water. And there's some work to do. And you find a spot in the yard where they're not going to be disturbed. And they always have the sun shining on them. There's all these different things I'm learning that I would have to do to do this. But, you know, I got months to plan this and save up for it. But it's something I'm pretty determined to do.
Yeah, very good. Well, there's your free listen, people, on the Midnight Beekeeping Cowboys.
We'll have to do The Swarm one day.
Oh, God. I own that film. It's just like a 3-hour fucking nightmare. It is just like, oh.
It is. It's horrible. And this is what's sad. I don't know if NBC just like paid nothing for it in the early 80s. But they used to air it once a month.
Yeah?
And me, like the idiot I am, I would watch it every time they aired it because it was so bad. And it would just run for like 3 hours. It would take up the entire... You know, like NBC just knew they were losing the ratings that night, so they just ran The Swarm.
Yeah.
It would just run forever. And you never feel like you saw the whole thing. because it would run ads like crazy. I just remember like Richard Chamberlain dying in slow motion. All these
ping-pong
balls are dressed up like bees or like hitting them. It's so stupid.
It's bad, but it's one of those dumb Sunday afternoon movies you could just chuck on and just. Pretty much playing in the background. You wouldn't sit there attentively watching it. I mean, I remember that boy in the hospital bed, and he's having that illusion that there's this fucking giant bee above him, and he's screaming, and Michael Caine's going, "There's no bee, there's no bee." I was like, "This is dumb, really." But I'll tell you one thing. When that hit DVD, The Swarm, I picked it up because it just went for like a dumb price of like $5 or $6. It became a collector's piece. It became really expensive at one point. It's like, really, The Swarm?
But it was a huge for the Irwin Allen stuff.
Okay, beekeeping. So you're really going to go ahead with this, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'm planning to do. I'm seriously planning it.
I told you that time I walked into a beehive. With all the bees surrounded by the queen bee. I didn't even know it. Well, I fucking knew it once I walked into it. Didn't get stung, though.
Supposedly there's people who can do it without even putting on the suit.
Jesus.
But the reason you put on the white suit is because when the bees see you and you're wearing like dark clothing and they see the hair on your head, they think you're a bear. And bears are like the natural enemy of the beehive.
Really?
Yes, because bears really do go up to beehives and try to suck the honey out and screw up the hive and stuff. So that's why you wear the white suit, because it kind of makes you invisible to the bees.
It's just like an episode of Winnie the Pooh, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's also a reality is to teach my kid that nature is not this Disney cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. I've also heard don't wear yellow around bees. It's like, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, apparently you really should go out like in the white suit, and you have to have a smoke gun to kind of calm them down or whatever, but with the thing that these two Australians have invented, you know, a lot of that work is gone. It's going to be even more low maintenance to do than ever.
Of course, it's created by Australians. We want to do as little as possible. So it's like,
well, I was like, why did these guys came up with it? It's like nobody else tried to advance beekeeping anywhere else in the world, and the Australians decided, hey, why don't we just make this where you just come out and turn a faucet and the honey comes right out?
Yeah. Whatever it is.
You don't mess with the bees. Less stress, they produce better, you know?
It gives more time to invest in something else that starts with B-double-E. It's called beer.
Exactly.
We can do less work over here. We can enjoy the beer.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we've already got hens. We have, like, backyard chickens, so it's like, might as well just make it as much of a suburban farm as we can.
Fair enough.
Right. I'll grow a Rick Rubin beard just to fit in with the image, so there.
just see John lying down with a big long beard, lying on the concrete, while these chicken eggs are aiming, bees producing honey, you know, 5 miles away. So it's like,
I'll be I'm listening to a new Scheme Richards mix on cassette.
Yeah,
it's like because Scheme released a limited edition, apparently already sold out, cassette only release of his latest mix. I did order.
You got one of 200, didn't you?
Yes, I put my money down. We'll support Scheme on this very interesting artistic commercial venture. So I have not listened to it. I've got to pull out my really good Sony ghetto blaster, as we might call it, that won't eat the tape, and then give it a spin.
Yeah. Nice one. We got to get Scheme back on as well. Really. Yeah. But as you guys know, and as we know, that guy's got a super duper fucking busy schedule. It's just insane. Yeah. I don't know how he does it.
I forget if he was in Europe or Asia last weekend.
Dude, it's just crazy. He's like,
can't even keep up.
I mean, Amsterdam this week. I mean, you know, 2 days ago he was in Philly. Now he's in Amsterdam. Now he's over to fucking Bavaria or God knows where the guy is. He's everywhere, you know. Japan.
2 nights in Japan. Yeah. It's like, I'm waiting for him to report from Mongolia.
I'm waiting for him to report from Australia. I always like, Scheme, get the hell down here, man. I'll take you around my motherland and show what it's like. Yeah.
See the Mad Max locations.
Yeah, don't worry about that shit. They're all up in Broken Hill and not near me. Well, there's some, but you want to see better stuff than fucking old industrial areas where Mad Max 1 was shot. It's not important, man. It's not important. All right. Anyway, I think we better wrap this up, John.
Yeah.
I personally can't recommend this enough. What are you giving it out of 10?
I give it an 8.
Okay, really you're going to give it you're yeah. going to give it 8 bent spoons out of 10.
Yes, 8 bent spoons.
Out of 10. All right. I'm going to give this I give it a 10, man. I can't see nothing wrong with it. For the whole 92 minutes, I was just enthralled about James Randi, and of course with the whole twist at the end, which really put another spin on it. It's like I can't fault it. I really can't.
Yeah.
If anything, I would have liked it, you know, a little longer. That's what she said. And throw one of those jokes in. I think it's a perfect 10 for me. I just think it's a fantastic documentary and one that I can watch again and again and again without any problems. Like we said, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it is on Netflix. It's rentable on Amazon. It's not part of their Prime service yet, but
no.
You can watch it for free on Netflix, and I think you can rent it on YouTube.
Okay. All right, well, there you go. But for those of you with a Netflix service, that's your best bet. Watch it there, and yeah, just prepare to be enlightened by the great, the amazing James Randi. I think he's just an incredible individual. And if you got no knowledge of what James Randi looks like, you think he's like this really big, strong guy. No, horribly mistaken. Small, unassuming, very thin, very funny man as well. Long ass, white beard. Eyebrows like nobody else has. Those eyebrows, I was transfixed on those eyebrows of his. They're huge. They're like a beard unto themselves, each one of them. They're just crazy big. But I a lot of things about Randi, his sense of humor is just like nobody else's. He's a very funny man. When he's in the coffee shop at the start and he's praising the cakes on the cake stand, I was just pissing myself laughing. It's like, very, very funny.
He's a true American hero that you don't hear about enough. So
he's a true American hero who's a Canadian. But there you go.
Yeah, American citizen, so he's technically an American. Now,
there
so.
You go. I'm sure one person that America would be very proud to claim as their own is the amazing Randi. So get onto it, an honest liar. Now what we're doing next week, I don't know. Can't really say.
We've talked about different possibilities.
Yeah, well, Jose Alvarez, number 3, you need to get back on so we can actually do it.
Yeah. I was pushing for the Towering Inferno. We should go for that since we're kind of going in that Irwin Allen direction. Unless you can think of something else that involves hypnotism, clouding men's minds, or any type of escape artistry, since this is turning into like Magic Month.
Yeah, pretty much, isn't it?
Movie Cowboys. Shadow reviewing this. I don't think I want to sit through the Christopher Nolan movie with the dueling magicians again. Not this year.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a bit too obvious doing that one.
Yeah,
a bit too obvious. I don't know. If you want to look at more trickery, maybe we could talk about Marjo soon.
Yeah,
there was a lot
that,
of
that would be an interesting one.
A lot of people who are fooled by that. That's a damn sure. But all right. Anyway, we'll catch you all guys next week, and thanks for listening in. You can get us over at the usual places, midnightmoviecowboys.com, iTunes for some reviews, please, guys. It's not that hard to do. We'd appreciate a few more of those. What else? midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com for just if you want to throw some niceties our way, some how great we are, or if you've got a show suggestion. Do that. Twitter over there. Okay, we did get told by listener Lee Russell, g'day Lee, that it'd be nice if we started tweeting a lot more about our episodes when they come out. So I guess Jose Alvarez, number 3, okay. I'm going to give him shit for not being here this week, but I mean, I can't talk. I'm the worst offender of the three of us. But yeah, Hunter, I'm going to get him to start doing those as well. And yourself, John, if you want to, when you're not beekeeping.
Right.
Yeah. We can just start tweeting about the episodes we drop when they drop and get the word out there a bit.
Well, I tweeted about the Shadow today. It's like, hey, I got to push this on Twitter. So there.
I think we better. Yeah. And
I should say I pushed it on a men's paperback group on Facebook. Got like something like 15 listens.
Oh, nice. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, a lot of thumbs up. So I was like, all right, got to push his stuff. Otherwise, we'll never be on one of those lists with 9 other super boring film podcasts that are called the podcast you need to listen to. So,
That's right. Or the blank movie podcasts, whatever the fuck they call themselves. But
there's a bunch that I don't, you know.
Yeah.
But can't say anything nice.
No. And you may think we're snobs. We're not. We're just debunking them. We're just debunking them, John, aren't we? That's what we're doing.
Yeah, pretty much. We're just debunking, skeptical of their coverage there.
Really, I think this show is pretty much the James Randi podcast. There's nothing sacred. We'll just, you know.
We make enemies everywhere, so, you know.
We really do, yeah. All right. Actually, there's one thing I really wanted to cover as well, was that my Amityville Horror documentary, which is like, that's the biggest load of shit out there.
Which one is that?
Oh, that's the one where they have the actual one of the Lutz kids on there. By the way, it hated his stepfather, George Lutz, but is quite happy to keep carrying the Lutz name for, you know, media and promotional purposes of their 40-year-old bullshit story from... really, but yeah. That's the one. That's the documentary we talked about on Netflix.
You know how small the world is? The wife and I were watching a Heart to Heart episode, and there was this actress in there that looked familiar, but didn't know her name. Looked her up. Turns out, when she was a little girl, they were the second family to live in the Amityville house that became the Amityville Horror house.
After the Lutzes or before that?
Before the DeFazios or whoever the family was.
The DeFeos, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, she was part of the family that lived in that house before they did. And then they sold them to the DeFazios, and then the murders happened, and it was sold to the Lutzes. And the Lutzes turned the whole thing into, basically they swipe stuff from the Shirley Jackson book, Haunting of Hell House, or whatever the book is called.
Oh, really?
It's believed a lot of that stuff was swiped from novels and old stories of the Boiler Rectory in the most haunted house in England. Yeah. Had all these kind of nonsense stories that a lot of people believe.
Is that the same as the movie? Is it the same as the movie The Legend of Hell House? Because I have that one.
Yeah, that's based on that, I believe.
Oh, really? Okay, I must watch that. Yeah.
Surely.
That's how bright the Lutz as well. Let's go and sell our story, this big horror story about this, you know, possessed house. Let's go sell the good housekeeping. Yeah, good one.
The pig with green eyes.
Jody the pig. Really? Yeah. All right. Okay, sign off, John.
All right. Mahalo.
All right, and see you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
TV.